Welcome back to the Homeschool Conversation Podcast, where we talk all things homeschool. On today's episode, I have a special guest, Jordan Dillenberger, and she is a homeschool mom and blogger, and she just has a ton of experience and wisdom to share with us. So I hope you'll enjoy today's episode, and Jordan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk to you.
I know, I can't wait to hear what you have to say. I think that your experience is going to be something that all the new homeschool moms and even the experienced homeschool moms are going to get to grow from, and I'm just excited to hear from you. So if you don't mind telling us a little bit about you and your homeschool journey, just so that people know like how old your kids are and why you started homeschooling, and since you're in California, you have the option of using certain resources. So if you can share if you're doing the PSA option, or if you're doing the charter school option, or if you're doing the private satellite program option.
Absolutely. So my name is Jordan. I have four kids. They are 9, 7, almost 4, and almost 2. My husband works for the fire department, and that is the basis of where we started with our homeschool journey. His work takes him away from home a lot. And when I really started, my kids, you know, kind of like around when my boys were 3 and 1, I really started to think about when they were gonna become school aged. What's our life gonna be like? Because his fire department schedule is 24-hour shifts, and a lot of times he goes in for, you know, 3 or 5 days at a time. So on these days, he's actually home. And if I put my kids in public school and they're doing activities, which a lot of kids do, that limited our family time to dinner and the short time between dinner and bed.
And just never see each other.
Just never, you know? So I did not want it. It's all about this time. This time that we have with our kids is fleeting. And in the moment when you're in the trenches, it's so hard. It feels like it's never going to end, but it will. And I just want to hang on to that for as long as I can. And
I love that you're saying that. I feel like since I started homeschooling, time has slowed down. It's almost like time is in slow motion.
Absolutely. Because to me, homeschooling, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. You're working towards an end goal, and you don't need to rush to hit that goal. You know, I was asked the other day about, you know, what do you do if your kid's behind or all this stuff? Well, so you slow down. And if you're not, you know, if you're using the state standards and as your guidelines for what you're teaching your kids, you know, all of that doesn't have to get done this year. If they're struggling with something really important like reading, slow down and focus on that, you know.
Right. And that's the thing. I think that I've heard someone say that there's no educational emergency.
And right.
Like, what does that mean? I never realized that there's such a thing as people believing that there's an educational emergency.
Right.
You know, it kind of dawned on me. I'm like, that makes sense that people feel like there's this invisible rush that you have to hit the standard. And if you don't, the fire is going to burn down your
neighborhood
or your home, you know, your child.
I just talked to a mom the other day. She is a kindergarten teacher. She has been a kindergarten teacher for 14 years. And she has twins at home who are going into kindergarten this year, and she does not want to send them to school. She told me that the state has gone from, you know, 50-something state standards for curriculum down to 27, and the ones that they have are now more like first grade standards, and they are so age inappropriate for kids in kindergarten. You know, so that's kindergarten. That's the footprint of their educational career, and they're being held to standards that are too high for them.
Right.
So, you know.
Well, and it's funny because kindergarten was never even a thing. That's only
right.
Developments. And I want to remind listeners that are hearing this, that are kind of balking at, you know, what we're saying. I know it's hard for people to understand this, but school actually isn't even legally required until age 6. So
yes.
What do you think about that? Did you start, are you doing like a traditional school at home approach, or are you kind of unschoolers, or do you start school with your younger ones? You know, like how do you, when do you start actually being intentional, or are you always intentional even with your two-year-old with learning?
So I feel like, you know, just as with everything, as with how you homeschool, as with curriculum you choose, as with your schedule that you make, there's so many different options out there. I feel like I'm a mix. When it comes to the big core subjects like reading and math and writing, I really like, you know, structured curriculum, but life provides us so many learning opportunities for, you know, science and music and art and history. And if you just go outside, you know, if your kid's interested in bugs, go outside, go find some bugs, look at them under a microscope. Okay. You're doing science, write about it. That's handwriting. Go inside and read a book or have your kid read to you. That's reading. You can cover so many of these subjects with just life. You know, so I don't like to put myself in a category of I am an unschooler, or I am a traditional schooler, or I am Charlotte Mason. I am, you know, all of these things. We're just homeschoolers.
I think you're a life. You're like life schooling. It's like you see the educational value in your everyday life.
And we do, you know, right now my daughter is 3, she'll be 4 in September. She is ready. She is ready for sit down structured school. My boys, they probably weren't ready at this age. So when they weren't ready, it was a lot more of, you know, okay, we're going to build Legos and we're going to talk about colors and we're going to paint a picture and we're going to, you know, do that kind of thing. But I did not, because school is not required until age 6, that is when I started my PSP, PSA journey. So I was doing stuff at home with them leading up to that.
So then when you did, a lot of people don't even know about the PSP option, and they are very attracted to the charter school option because of the funding. But as you know,
right,
as many people know, the funding option is now no longer an option. So now people feel like their only choice is to do the PSA. So I wanted to see if you could speak on what your experience was like when you did the PSP, because you've been homeschooling for 6 years now, and you said that you did the PSP for your oldest when they were in kindergarten, and then now you're doing the PSA route. Is that right?
That's correct. So when it felt like we were coming into the very official part of our school years, I was very intimidated by the PSA. You know, I just really hadn't put much time into researching it and what it required. It just sounded scary. You know, now it's me, it's all on me. I am responsible for filing this affidavit with the state and maintaining these records. And I'm a brand new homeschooler. How am I going to do that? So I chose a PSP option. What a PSP will offer you really varies from PSP to PSP. Some you pay them only to file the affidavit for you and maintain your records. Other PSPs, like the one that I had signed up with kindergarten, offered, you know, meetups and things for the moms and parents, you know, family barbecues, on top of filing the PSA on my behalf and maintaining my records.
Okay, so then did the PSP also, so you had to pay them a tuition fee, but then
yes,
for that fee you were able to get like the paperwork stuff done.
Yes.
About your and then did they also like supply a curriculum and lesson planning for you, or was that still in your?
No, that was all me, but they did have, you know, they were a faith-based PSP, and so they did have some requirements as far as teaching Bible, and they did give me a guideline. You know, you need to fill this out and what you're using for all these subjects. What are you doing for math? What are you doing for history, handwriting, you know, blah, 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 blah. After my first year with them, they were far away and I was not able to attend a lot of their meetings and group at things that they were offering. And so I kind of felt like that money was wasted, because once I realized the actual filing and what it is, it's a document online that's 97 questions long, and that's it. And that's the only thing you turn into the state. And these records you have to keep, I was turning into them anyways. So why wouldn't I just do this myself? It's where I went with that. At the time, we had also purchased a house out of state, and we were kind of splitting our time. And so they were needing me to turn in things on a certain day. And sometimes those days I would be gone and I didn't have that stuff with me. And it just became a hassle. And
yeah,
so
it took away some of your freedom too. It
sounds yeah. Like. Yeah. That was, to me, that's one of the biggest things about homeschooling is the freedom. I don't want anyone. And some people do. Some people want the, or need the accountability and the guidance. And I just, it didn't appeal to me.
And I think maybe like the first year, I do think that it's helpful for the moms to be in a place of peace. Because I think if a mom isn't in a place of peace and she's feeling very anxious about homeschooling and she feels like she really wants that guidance, that reassurance from someone else, and having that record keeping, just that concrete evidence in front of her that yes, she's accomplishing something. You know, I can see why a PSP is great for that type of mom who really wants that type of close surveillance. But can you speak about what it's been like now for you to not have that guidance now that it's been 6 years and you have two school age kids then, right? And then your third one is sort of beginning the school age process. So what is it like for you now doing the PSA? You have no standardized testing and no records you have to keep?
So I do have records to keep, but I do not have to participate in standardized testing. If I felt like I needed to test my kids to see where they are, you know, are they struggling with something and now I can see, you know, where they need room for improvement, you can just go buy those tests online. But I've never been in that situation. So I, like you just said, I was that mom. I needed that hand holding my first year because I did not know what this was going to look like and what this journey was going to be like. My first year, I would have never imagined myself to later on be an independent homeschooler filing these records by myself. But like I said, just doing it and seeing for myself is how I figured out that this PSP, I didn't need it. I was ready to move on to the PSA. So filing the PSA, you have a 2-week window in October, between October 1st and October 15th. It's an online form. You go in and it's just the actual private schools in California file the exact same form. And a PSP files the exact same form, except when it gets to the student part, they are counting your kids as their students and submitting that. So when I fill out this form, I am my own private school in California. And I'm marking, you know, how many students I have in grade 2, how many I have in grade 4, who is the administrator? It's me. Who is the principal? I give my husband that title and I put his contact information there. I am agreeing and telling them that these records are maintained at my home, at this address, that they are true, you know, and that's the gist of it. That's it.
Right. So then that doesn't, I mean, I think it can sound a little bit daunting maybe to some people who are like, wow, that sounds like a lot of, because I homeschool with a charter. So I can see how for someone else who isn't, and they're hearing all that stuff for the first time, it sounds like it's a lot. But you're saying that, you know, it's gotten easier for you, especially now that you've been doing it for a few years. So there's probably a lot of support when you're first starting to do it and you don't know what to put for certain sections, right?
So as an independent schooler, I insist if you are going on this journey, and even if you aren't, HSLDA, which is the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, is your biggest resource. I consider them my insurance policy. Each year before the new school year's PSA comes out from the Department of Education, they send you an email after they have reviewed the PSA with line by line instructions on what to put in every single question. And they detail if there's changes from last year compared to this year's PSA. So that is my, they are my helping hand. I print out the email I get from them, I put it next to my computer, and I, as I go through the PSA, I look at what they said to put there, click, click.
Anyone who doesn't know what HSLDA is, I think it stands for the Homeschool Legislative Defense.
Legal Defense Association.
Yes, so they have like homeschool lawyers, and they have a ton of resources on there. So if you're ever in a legal situation, like maybe if you're in like a divorce situation, and your ex-spouse wants to, if they're challenging whether or not you're actually doing something, or if someone wanted to accuse you of not educating your children, like they have homeschool lawyers, and they have all access to all 50 states' homeschool laws, since they vary from state to state. So HSLDA is a really awesome resource to have membership to. I forget what their membership fee is, but it's definitely worth
it. I just paid mine. It's $110 a year. And it's a lawyer on retainer. I just love them. I cannot love them more.
Yeah. I know some people have an issue with them because I think it's a Christian organization, right?
It is.
And so then there's like certain things that, because it's a faith-based association, that they don't agree with. But for the most part, you're not required to be a Christian in order to be a part of the association, and they do support people who are in the secular community. So I just want to encourage any of the listeners out there that just because belief systems are different, you can still use HSLDA for your legal and other types of resource support. And with that being said, I know that you mentioned finding out that HSLDA offers help with special education, which I know that's something that a lot of homeschool parents are struggling with, understanding that they can actually get special ed help, and they're worried that they can't take their kids out of school because if they do, they won't get special ed support. So what did you find out about that?
So I knew already that if a child has an IEP in place, those services cannot be denied to them. But I was on HSLDA's website because I wanted clarification on that. And I actually found out they have something called a Compassion Curriculum Grant. And that is to help homeschoolers with diagnostic services, therapy, curriculum, and other educational materials. And I just think that is huge because so many moms have come to me and they're like, you know, I'm using a charter, or I was using a charter, or I was in public school and we had these services, and how am I going to afford these, or how am I going to continue to provide these for my kids if I'm homeschooling? So...
Exactly. And so I can speak to the fact that I am homeschooled with a charter school, and so I found out that my son had a speech impediment, and so I was about to go and pay out of pocket to bring him to a speech therapist where they charge like $150 for the initial evaluation, and then each therapy session after that I think is like $50, and then I could submit it all to my insurance company and hope and pray that I get reimbursed. But I found out that the charter school actually not only provides the service for free, the evaluation and the therapy, but they also provided me with a laptop, a headset, which I'm actually using, that my son could get speech therapy at home, and I didn't have to pay for any of the equipment or the service. And they also offered me occupational therapy to help him with his handwriting, because I think his finger muscles, who would ever think of this, but his finger muscles are not strong enough to hold a pen long enough to write as long as he's supposed to be able to write. So what they do with occupational therapy is they actually help him do exercises with his hand and these little fine motor activities to help develop his finger muscles so that he can have the endurance to write longer. And I'm like, here I am thinking he just hates writing or he's not good at it. And I'm like, it's really just a struggle for him to hold the pen. If I would just give him that support and have that awareness that there are reasons outside of what we think, then I could be helping him instead of getting frustrated with him. So I just think it's awesome to have that community, that those evaluations available to you. And I feel like I may have even missed that if he was in school, you know. I love that I was able to have that support, you know. So I also wanted to ask you about, you know, just the entire experience. Like, if you have advice for with your experience now, since you've been doing this for 6 years, if you knew back in the beginning what you know now, mm-hmm. is there any advice that you would give to your former self or for for newer homeschool moms?
Yes. When I began homeschooling, I didn't have the balancing part of it figured out. And I thought, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom, so I'm already used to handling a lot of the stuff that happens within my house. Now I'm adding homeschooling to it. Now I am trying to do everything that I was doing prior to losing hours of my day homeschooling my kids. You know, so I didn't give myself enough grace. And a lot of time, I was very hard on myself, and I wish that I wouldn't have, because I know my kids are in tune to me and my attitude, and that sets a tone for our day. And I feel like a lot of times I came into this like, I'm just frustrated. There's so much I have to do on top of doing this. And, you know, I just didn't give myself enough grace. Sometimes, especially as your kids get...
Yeah. Just cut out for a second.
Oh, sure.
I pressed something, so I hear you now, but your voice went out, so I'll have to edit out that whole
set, okay,
like the last like maybe 15 or 20 seconds. The last thing I heard you say was my kids about being in tune with each other.
Oh, okay. So I feel like my kids are very in tune to my attitude and what I'm bringing to the table. So when I didn't have the balancing act figured out, and I was coming to our homeschool morning with a frustrated or I have so much to do attitude, and now we need to sit here and I need to be patient, that was not setting a good tone for our homeschool. And I think if you're taking all this on, if you're a stay-at-home mom and you're raising kids and you're homeschooling, something's got to give. and you got to figure out what that something has to give, and it's okay to ask for help. That's the biggest point I want to drive home, is that it is okay to ask for help. I needed a little bit more help around the house because I was losing a lot of the time that I would have normally spent, you know, deep cleaning my windows or doing laundry, because this, what are your priorities? To me, educating those kids is a huge priority. Deep cleaning my windows, not so much.
I hear you on that. I think reaching out for help is hard for moms because they want to be able to do it all, and they feel like if they're not doing it all, then who are?
Then they're failing.
Yeah. And it's just the biggest lie, because we all, I mean, there might be days that I think we're able to pull it off, but
oh yeah,
it's like you pull it off and like something isn't done well. Or you like have a really great day one day, but you can't always, I think, juggle it all every day and do it well without feeling exhausted. You know, if either yourself suffers, like your own self-care suffers, and then that comes out to your kids, or something else struggles with, whether it's your marriage or it's your house being clean or laundry being done. It's a lot. It's a lot to juggle. And adding on the homeschooling section to that, it's tricky. So how do you balance it all? How do you manage to homeschool like multiple grades? And now you have a third one coming in. What does your system look like right now?
So it has been very trial and error. And it was much harder when I had two non-readers, because homeschooling two non-readers at the same time means that they both need you for everything. And so when I had two non-readers and other little kids who were, you know, toddlers and babies, it still took us about 4 hours to do school, because I would do my youngest first while my oldest helped keep the little ones busy. And we would get through his work because his work didn't take as long. And then we would switch, and my younger would go and play with the siblings or do something. You know, we have a homeschool room, and I filled it with, you know, educational things that they can do to occupy their time, you know, magnet tiles and tanagrams and coloring books, crafts, all that sort of stuff, so that they're doing something productive with their time while I am helping someone else.
And I love that you like have that system in place where you don't try to do all the things at once. You have the siblings interacting with each other. Can you speak on what amount of time are you actually expecting your kids to be able to sit and pay attention with you? Because I think some people are expecting that they're going to get like two yes. hours of uninterrupted time. And if they can't no. get that, then what am I doing?
The biggest, another huge point, homeschooling does not have to mimic public school. The time you spend, if you really think back on even, you know, if you were a public school student, or if you've been in the classroom helping out, you know, while you're like in your child's classroom at public school, how much time are they spent engaged in learning compared to all the other things that they have to do at school to fill the day? You know, recess, recess again, lunch, assemblies, you know, morning announcements, all these things take time, but they're not actual time spent learning. So I really think from my experience that, you know, preschool, kindergarten, even first grade, that's like an hour, hour and a half, maybe, you know, it depends on what you're doing. And do you have these other factors going on? Do you have other kids in the house? Do you have, you know, activities going on, that sort of stuff that interrupts your day? Right now we're like about 4 hours, and we start around 8 and we're done by lunch. And what we don't get done, and it's my fourth grader who takes the most because his work is just more intense right now. What we don't get done though by lunch, I roll it over, because after that they need their time. They need their time to go do what they want to do in their day, and I need my time to go do the rest of the things that I have to do in my day for our house to not go up in flames.
Yeah, so how long does your children actually sit and stay focused before they need to have a break in that 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. window?
You know, that really, it really varies, because some days they're on it and they are not distracted and they want to get through their work because they want to be done. Other days, it's not so much.
Yeah, I read somewhere, or I think my mom told me, my mom's a teacher, I think it was her, someone told me that however many years old your child is, that's how many minutes they can actually spend with focused attention before they need like 30-second break, or their brain just does the 30-second break whether you give it to them or not, so they can just daydream and not realize that they're needing the break, and then we're missing the opportunity to teach our kids that yes, when you're not focused, it's better for you to actually take the break and come back. But they're going to take the break, so if he's 9 years old, he may only be able to give you a good 9 solid minutes before his brain's just going to start. I mean, I feel like
yeah.
I know what that's like when I'm reading a book, I can't just sit there for like an hour and read it and not have my mind go somewhere else. I feel like after 20 minutes, and I'm actually 30, so like now maybe it's 30 minutes.
Right.
After 30 minutes, I do. My brain's, even if I'm so loving what I'm reading, my brain just starts thinking about something else.
Yeah. And you add in all these other factors. Did they get a good night's sleep? Did they have a very good filling breakfast before you started? Did your husband come home from work for you know, that's
just ruined
that's
everything.
Yes, he's been gone for 4 days and now he's here and they want nothing to do with school because they miss their dad. And
yeah,
dads I've lost
just
them.
Throw a whole wrench into the homeschool day. I find that so many moms say that they're when their husbands are home, their homeschool day looks nothing like it usually does.
And that to me, I've realized that when dad comes home from work, our homeschool days are a lot different. So on the days he goes to work, I try to get a lot more done because I know what those days when he's home are going to look like. So if that means that he's at work on a Saturday, but he's home on a Thursday, then I don't necessarily have to do school on Thursday and I can save it for Saturday, because you can pick any day of the week that you want to do homeschooling.
Right, and I think that's a huge advantage too, just thinking like what you were saying about being able to actually know that your kid didn't have breakfast or they didn't sleep well. Those are all the factors that get eliminated in school, and who can really function and learn well when they haven't had a good breakfast? breakfast or a good night's sleep, or they had to be woken up early even though they couldn't sleep the night before. I feel like I love that aspect of homeschooling, that you get to take into all the account all these like personal things that are going on for the kid, and really maximize their attention span so that they can then learn and not be aggravated. So as we start to finish up here, I can talk to you forever, but I don't want to talk the entire day. But I wanted to ask you about your blog that you're starting, and how people can reach you so that if they are needing advice, or if they are really vibing with the way you do things, or if they have similarities, if they have similar age children to you, then they can connect with you. So tell us about your blog and how you can reach you.
Okay, so this week I decided I'm going all in. I've had so many people just who know me in my personal life know that I've been homeschooling for a long time, and now they're trying to figure out this distance learning or school at home, whatever they're doing. And I've decided to, you know, people need the information that I have. So I am at I'm at Dilly School on Instagram and Facebook. I have a blog. It's dillyschool.blog. It's from WordPress, so if you have the WordPress app or whatever, you can find it on there. I want people to know that they have options. Distance learning is not one size fit all for everyone. So many moms are like, my kids sat in front of the Zoom for 5 hours and they didn't learn anything until we got off and did the work together. You know? No, it's not. And it's not one size fits all. And that is what is being put out there. They expect.
What do you think is like the biggest difference between distance learning and homeschooling? I'm curious, like, what your perspective is about what is the difference between distance learning and homeschooling for you?
Well, my concern is the screen and the Zoom aspect of it. Like, no way could my kid sit in front of the computer for 5 hours listening to someone else and trying to do work alongside of that. There's no way. It just wouldn't work. Actual interaction, you lose a lot just FaceTime and text messaging and the digital world that we're in. You know, someone's inflection, all that gets lost. And my kids, they need me and my voice to encourage them on this. And the computer thing, it just doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that the biggest thing for me is that distance learning, the children really don't even get to like choose what they're going to be learning about. They're kind of forced into whatever is the standards for the state.
Yeah.
And that's something I really have loved about homeschooling, is that my kids really get to choose what they want to learn about. For like, I let my kids actually pick out when we are doing curriculum. I let them pick out curriculum. This year we're not doing curriculum. I'm letting my kids design their own curriculum. We're like designing goals that they want to learn about Nerf guns and how they were made and how.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, they want to do all the subjects related to Nerf guns. That's my 9-year-old boy, of course.
And then, of course.
My daughter wants to learn about how chocolate's made. She wants to know about the history of chocolate, how you grow cocoa beans. And so we're going to do, I'm letting them design their own curriculum. So that way I can kind of put my homeschool on autopilot. I don't have to homeschool the kids. And so they pick out what they want to learn, and they're motivated like intrinsically. So I'm able to tend to my toddler twins, and if they need me, if they don't know how to find something they want to know, then of course I'm there to jump in for a really quick second. But I think that's what the biggest difference for me is that in the distance learning, there's just no input from the children whatsoever. And that can be boring. That can feel like your voice doesn't matter. It can feel like, you know, what I want to know doesn't matter, what I'm curious about doesn't matter. And how long can you really sustain that? How long before a child like emotionally blows up in that?
Yeah, I feel like it just fosters a bad environment. It's, you set kids up for a lot of pushback, and the teachers aren't the ones who are getting the pushback in distance learning. It's the parents at home who are trying to manage their child's distance learning, yeah, right?
And I think the teachers are doing like the best they could. I mean,
absolutely.
Not even like a disrespect towards them. I feel like like, oh my gosh, if I was a teacher and I had to suddenly have this on my plate, I mean, it must be so emotionally difficult for them too, because it's not what they signed up for. So I totally hear the teachers on this, because I see a lot of my friends are teachers and they're just posting on social media about how frustrating this is for them. Some of them don't even want to go back to work this fall because, again, this is like, this is not what I signed up for. Having all these like wibbly wobbly schedules. So I think we'll see a big influx of homeschoolers and
definitely.
And so I guess as we finish up, is there any advice you have for people who are thinking about homeschooling and feel like they're just are overwhelmed, they don't know where to start, and they don't know how to weed through all of the options? They feel overwhelmed with information. What curriculum do I pick? Like, do you have some type of overarching advice for the newer homeschoolers who are kind of being forced into this and don't know where to start?
One thing at a time. You have to just, it's just one thing at a time. So you need to decide, are you going to do the distance learning program through your school district, or are you going to homeschool? Okay, so you've made a choice there. Those are the hard choices. The rest of them, picking curriculum, Google search, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook groups, all these things. Start your research. What kind of things does your child like to learn about? How do they learn? What curriculum fosters to those things? You know, it's just one thing at a time. That is huge, because there's so much information. There are so many options. There's just so much. It's absolutely overwhelming. And that was my reasoning for starting my blog and my Instagram, because I can't imagine coming into this as a new homeschooler right now. I've planned for this forever. Everyone else, the majority of the new homeschoolers right now, have been tossed into this with no guidance, no plan, no nothing. And that I hope to be the person that they need right now.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I started this podcast too, is just that I'm like, there's so much perspective that's lost, and people who assume things about homeschooling, that they're not socialized, that they're falling behind, that they won't.
Oh yeah.
Just so many things that are misunderstandings. So I'm like, you know what, let me share perspective that's not just my own. Let me share other people's perspective. And I'm hoping that through this podcast, I'll get to encourage some of our listeners that just feel like they don't know what to do, or they are confused, or they're skeptical, or whatever it is. And so, you know, as we finish up here, I swear I could just keep talking to you. I want you to tell me some things that you did to, like, after you decided you were going to homeschool, what are some, like, the first few steps? You said, you mentioned, like, comparing curriculum, thinking about learning styles. Did you actually make yourself, because I did that, I made myself a chart.
Oh yeah.
I made myself a chart and I compared all the curriculums. I started learning about learning styles. So I feel like I gave myself homework each day.
Yes.
Like, okay, today I'm going to learn about what learning styles are, because I don't know what learning styles are. And so I can't even know how well my kids learn, because I don't even know what a learning style is. So I had to learn that there was like four different categories of learning styles. And then I had to, there's like this Kathy Duffy curriculum review book where it.
Yes, I love that website.
Yeah. So did you do, are there any like practical steps that you can think of that you did in that first year to help, or after that first year when you did the PSP, are there any practical steps you can think of to give people to do that are like similar to what I'm describing?
Yes. So a couple things. What was huge for me was I had a veteran homeschooler in my life who, not only was she a homeschooler, but she was also married to a fireman. And so she understood my life. And I picked her brain like no other.
Yeah.
Because she had the information that I needed. So number one would be reaching out to other homeschool families and just ask questions. What are their days like? How did they begin? What is their story? How did they educate their children? Number two was, thanks to this veteran mom, I heard about a homeschool convention. It's called CHEA, and I believe it's the Christian Home Educators Association of California. They put on a huge convention every year. Most years it's in Pasadena. This year it was supposed to be in Anaheim, but because of the coronavirus, they couldn't have it. It's like a 3-day long weekend. It's vendors come, they set up curriculum booths. You can go and put your hands on these things and see them in person. And that to me helped me to figure out a lot of our curriculum. Like, I think I want to look at this. I look at it. No, this would not work for our family. They have lectures. They have, you know, big keynote speeches. All of that, to me, that helped me so much. It's information. Take all the information you can get and apply it to your homeschool journey. And the last thing I did that changed my life was there is a homeschool mom and blogger. Her name is Christy Clover.
Oh, I know Christy, yeah.
And she had a homeschool organization e-course. And I bought the e-course and I took the e-course, and her planning is, it was like a light bulb went off. And quick story.
Of course, yeah, of course.
Okay. So she went into planning and how she does it her whole year at one time. And that sounds scary.
I feel like I may have seen, she's a YouTube channel. Does she have an accordion?
She does have a YouTube channel, and she does a lot of, you know, like reviews, and she's written books. But one of her planning things was this year at a time, and you use a crate and you put file folders in there for each week. And then you get your curriculum, you get a knife, and you cut it out, and you file each week's work in these folders, and then your kid can just go get their week's worth of work, and they know what they're doing. This saved my life, because when my oldest, so my boys were 5 and 3, and I was pregnant with my daughter, I went to the hospital at 33 weeks pregnant because I was having contractions, and I had to stay there for a week, and I ended up in an emergency C-section, and she was born at 34 weeks. She spent a month in the NICU. I was there every single day, all day long. My mom came out from Arizona, and because I had this crate system in place, there was no disruption in my homeschool. She was able to go be me. She pulled the week's worth of work. She knew exactly what they were supposed to be doing. And our homeschool did not take a huge hit in attendance because I needed to be with my daughter at the hospital. She needed me more than the boys needed me. That was so, that balance there was so hard, but it just, to me, that was like, my homeschool wasn't ruined. And that was,
I think it's important to have those autopilot type systems where,
yes,
it's not on you all the time to remember what to do and what are we supposed to be doing, and
because life happens. It just does. And you can't.
I have a question I'm thinking about as you're describing this. I'm wondering, do you actually complete curriculum cover to cover, or do you, I don't know if you remember in public school, but I remember my teacher would skip certain chapters that she just either didn't feel like was important or she just didn't like it. So I wonder about that too. For people who follow a curriculum, do you cover it cover to cover?
Yeah. So for example, we use Matthew C, and they have lessons. It's like 19A through 19G. But if my kids have gone through these, you know, if they've done 4 of these pages and they've got it, we're moving on. You don't have to. Some people, I feel like they're structured and they feel like they have to complete every single page. Yes, check all the boxes.
Check it.
Yes, but that's what's awesome about homeschooling is that if there's a struggle or if there's a subject that your kid is either flying through or they're struggling with, you have the option to slow down and pull back the reins and work on that subject, or keep advancing them, keep going forward. It's totally up to you.
Yeah, that's the thing I think is hard for people, because they feel like, okay, no, the curriculum is designed this way and I need to do all the pages, and if we don't do all the pages, then it's like I didn't do enough. Yeah, and it's not true. And I want to encourage anyone who is, whatever curriculum you're deciding on, whether it's the Math C or Singapore or all the different options that are out there, that that you do not have to do that. You do not have to even, you can even, you know, skip over lessons, like if something like history or language arts, where you don't have to do all of the lessons because some of them may just be not interesting. Like they don't build on each other is what I'm saying.
Sure.
In those types of subjects, it's okay to skip like a certain lesson or to come back to it. I know for me, I was using Masterbooks curriculum, which is a Christian curriculum. And there was a science book and it had a whole bunch of different lessons about plants, animals, blah, blah, blah. But my son was not interested in the plant section.
Move on.
I had a choice. I'm like, I could force him to learn about the plants, or I could skip the plant section and move on to the bees and the the dragonflies. And so what I did was I literally opened the book in front of him and I flipped it. I'm like, tell me which one stands out to you, which one like sparks your curiosity, and let's do that one. And so we did that, and then of course, like months later, I find him looking at the plant section on his own, and he's like, Mom, I want to go find out what this plant is. Is this like a poisonous plant? I want to go find this and see if it's really poisonous. So I'm like, you know what? It's so important for us to listen to our kids in some instances, you know, not to feel like you have to go in order, you know, for certain subjects like I think science and I think social studies, you have that freedom to skip. I think with math, maybe it can be harder, and with learning how to read, it could be harder to skip because then you feel like you're missing things. I just wanted to give, you know, our listeners that flexibility, permission, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, all right, anyway, we were going, like, way over time. I'm taking more time than I wanted to take.
Sorry.
But there's just so many interesting topics. I still want to pick your brain about other things, but we'll save it for another episode. And so it's been so much fun to talk to you. Thank you for being on the show with me.
Thank you so much for having me.